preeminence in that region of the world. And that, it seems to me, is the issue that we're talking about here. The differences between the candidates and the parties, unfortunately, is much more appearance than it is reality. And that's what we've been talking about this whole issue of the Middle East from the very beginning. The Arabs, the Sunnis, the Shiites, the Israelis, military arms.
Seaton. This is the Quality News Network. Weather experts say Hurricane Dean is picking up power as it swings westward through the Gulf of Mexico toward the Yucatan. Currently at Category 4, Dean is expected to gain in strength over the next few hours to 155 miles per hour, which places it at Category 5 as it slams into central Mexico. Heavy rain and winds are also expected in South Texas, already saturated after an unusually wet summer season. In Japan, 165 passengers safely evacuated a China Airlines jet just before it burst into flames on the airport tarmac. Authorities say the jet's left engine exploded 1 minute after landing. The aircraft's pilot was seen on video jumping from the cockpit's window as the last crew member escaped from a rear door. A roadside bomb killed the governor of the Shiite Muthanna province in Iraq today. It is the second assassination of a top provincial official within 1 week. Two car bombs also struck Sadr City and a busy market in Baghdad. 6 people were killed. At least 20 were wounded. A mortar strike hit eastern Baghdad's Amman district at midday today. At least one person was killed, 3 others wounded, according to an Iraqi interior minister. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki arrived in Syria for his first visit there since taking office last year. U.S. officials say that Syria is allowing foreign fighters to cross its borders as its capital city struggles with a growing number of desperate Iraqi refugees. French Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner met with President Jalal Talabani and other Iraqi officials in the first visit there by a French official since the beginning of the war back in 2003. A judge has dropped 2 charges against Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Jordan, the only officer among the 12 defendants charged in the 2003 Abu Ghraib prison scandal. Authorities in Peru have given up finding any more bodies from last week's magnitude 8 earthquake. More than 540 victims have been recovered. In Minneapolis, another body was recovered Sunday from the collapsed bridge ruins. The death toll now stands at 12. At the Crandall Canyon mine in Utah, officials say 6 coal miners trapped for 2 weeks in a cave in are likely dead and may never be recovered. Hotel magnate Leona Helmsley has passed away in Connecticut at the age of 87. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll look at science and business news. That's next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The space shuttle Endeavour is on its way back to Earth, scheduled to land tomorrow. NASA ordered the shuttle to return 1 day early as a precaution in the unlikely event Hurricane Dean affects Cape Canaveral in Florida. Control over the oil-rich Arctic Northwest Passage is on the agenda today when Canada's Prime Minister and Mexico's President meet with President Bush. Melting ice mass from climate change has made oil and gas recovery in the Arctic more attractive to Canada, the U.S., and Russia. The Associated Press reports its analysis of DEA statistics indicates use of the nation's 5 most popular painkillers surged 90% between 1997 and 2005. The use of the chemical oxycodone increased 6-fold. 75% of union members at auto parts supplier Delphi ratified a new four-year contract this weekend. GM's former parts division, Delphi, is struggling to emerge from bankruptcy. The nation's second-largest home improvement retailer beat Wall Street expectations today by posting a 9% increase in quarterly profit on earnings of $1.02 billion. Shares of Lowe's jumped 4% in pre-market trading. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 16 points at 13,095. NASDAQ up 4 points, the S&P 500 down 3. And there's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
From Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The Iraq War, or occupation as some call it, is well into its fifth year. And just this week they announced that more than 4,000 coalition troops have died. But Americans at home aren't feeling the war that much. Certainly if you're a veteran, you are, or if you're a family member of one of the 4,000 that's been killed, or the tens of thousands that are wounded. If you're a taxpayer, heck, we're borrowing all the money. You'll just pay for it years down the line. But for the Iraqis, it's another matter. They feel it every day. The majority of the world's population lives under a dictatorship, and the Iraqi people certainly didn't do well under Saddam Hussein. But things are a lot worse for them now. Some say that as many as 1 million Iraqi civilians are now dead. And I want to go this show and talk about from an Iraqi perspective. I've got some YouTube video produced by Iraqis themselves, and I want to focus on the war from their point of view. I also want to have a point of view different from my own. I always like to hear someone, if there's anyone, still left defending the administration. And I got him to my right. His name is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intelifin Strategies. It's his job to give political strategy to the Republicans. And I think he's going to have a tough time defending this occupation where it is. But welcome to the show, Mike Lane.
Pleasure to be back, Mark. Thank you very much.
I want to play for you these videos. Mike has seen these before. I doubt you have. I think they're pretty powerful. I want to start with a video simply of Americans driving. This is a video taken from inside a Humvee. I don't know who took it, presumably an American soldier. But this is a Humvee driving in traffic. And every time you see it approach a car and give a little tap, it's actually hitting the back of the car, pushing them out of the way. Let's show how Americans drive in Iraq. Now watch. It gives a tap to that car, and that car moves over. Again, we're watching from inside a Humvee. Oh, it's another one. Think how you would feel if you were the driver in these cars, getting rammed in the back by, in essence, a tank. As we're watching this, Mike, I don't know if you have any particular comments on it. Well, I'm watching it. I had a Humvee on the runway, so I went like this. You'd get one of those new speeding tickets in Virginia. That gave quite a hit to that car. People did not seem happy about that. You'd think it'd have a siren or something rather than actually ramming the back of each of these cars. Now comes a bus. What are they going to do with the bus? Oh, go over the median. There you go. Hit the bus. Why not?
I even make it a rule never to hit cars that are bigger than I am. You know, that's
well, it's they're driving a tank. Now, I want you to imagine that you're living in a city where you've got a foreign occupying power driving tanks through your crowded streets and doing what this tank is doing. Again, this is from the American perspective here. Now it's crossing the median, going on the wrong side of the street. And I want you to imagine this is a commonplace occurrence in your town. You have a tank going at you on the wrong side of the street now. That person has to be careful. And think how you would feel as an Iraqi from having this kind of thing happen to you. Now watch this. This is a roundabout. And the tank's going to go in the wrong direction on the roundabout, causing lots of havoc. Okay. Now, the reason I showed you that video was in order to show you the next one. First, I just wanted to give you an idea of what it's like just to imagine you're in Iraq, you're driving along, and these tanks are in your street, hitting the back of your cars. That can't please somebody, Mike.
Well, I'm sure I don't know if it pleases them or doesn't. It was very clear to me that at least half the people in that video knew it was their obligation to get out of the way of the Humvee when it was coming through. You saw them all clear, particularly when they went the wrong way around.
About half of them.
You saw them make way.
You see a tank coming at you,
and
anytime
they gave them a little love tap from behind, very nicely just moved off to the right-hand side and let it pass through.
Would you want foreign tanks in your streets doing this kind of thing?
I don't think I'd want foreign tanks in my streets at all. But if they were there, I would certainly do what they told me to do.
I showed you that video in order to show you this one. Now, the first one, of course, was produced by some American GI. We don't know who. It's on the YouTube. But this is produced entirely by Iraqis who speak English. And I want to thank Michelle from California who wrote in and alerted me to this. Watch this story. This will take some time.
This is my uncle.
He's like my godfather. He was there when I was born. He was there when I was a kid.
He raised them up. He likes my sons just like his son.
He was my brother, my friend. Anything I wanted him to do, he was ready to do it. He helped me too much.
Yesterday, my cousin told me that something was wrong.
It was something anyway wrong.
He was the last one that we expected.
That was about 6:30 p.m.
My uncle was going to the market to bring some bread for dinner.
That's my uncle's very old car. He was coming back home.
I received a call from one of the neighbors.
They told us that he had a car accident.
He was going through the square just like this. There were some blocks in the road, and some American patrol showed up from behind this block, going in the wrong side of the road. He saw them coming to him, and he stopped to them, and he waved. Not to shoot.
I went immediately with one of my sons to the scene of the accident, and I saw him on the ground with his car distracted and he was covered.
In this picture, my mom, my dad, me, and my dead uncle Mehmet.
I saw bullets in the car, more than 40 or 50 shots.
All the history of 55 years for himself, for his family, just like that.
I lost him simply because one of the soldiers, saying that this
American soldiers,
thought that he might be a terrorist. I lost him.
دلوقتي بره في عدد هنا. I have the ability to know who killed my uncle. I would kill him simply.
We used to like the American people. We used to believe that they are good people. But by force, by military action, not the best will come.
The American forces, they're not here to help us. From the break-in to my grandma's house, from my uncle's death, I don't see anything good. And it's been 4 years.
Maybe not much we can say that some mistake happened, but if it happens more than that, then I have to consider them my enemy.
And my brother is one of thousands of people who have been killed in the same way for nothing.
What if something wrong happened
to one of your sons? The only thing that I'm thinking about nowadays, every hour, every minute, every day, the security of my sons and my family. What shall I do? I don't know.
They're supposed to have good future in the medical school, but their safety is primary now for us, not their future.
We don't want to stay here in Iraq anymore, so we're going to take our chances. I don't know, I'm willing to start from all over again, leave my study here. I don't know. Yeah, I'm telling you, whatever chance I'm going to take, I'm going to take it. I mean, maybe they won't let me in. We're going to try. I mean, we have to try this.
Just arrived to the border.
You can see how much cars. Turn the motor on. She missed out on the motor. You know, I'll clean the
motor. Then I'm in the motor. So, it's on them to do it. Plan them to do it. How I can do it. I have my hat. وبالأخير يقولون أني مرة من إحنا قاعدين 6 ساعات وكل بساطة يقولون رجعوا.
شنو شعورك؟ أنا بالنسبة لي يعني لعبوا أنا نفسي، لاحظت إن دليت وأني يعني بلي السبب
كلش منظري معبر عن شعوري وإحساسي حاليا.
Pretty powerful video. It was produced by Iraqis, for Iraqis, for the world. And a recent CBS poll has said that Americans believe, 3-1, that the war in Iraq is creating more terrorists than it's destroying. I'm going to give Mike, I know he's got a lot to talk about this, as do I. We're going to have a long time to talk about it right after the break. If you want to call in and that your voice be heard, please do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Reflect on what you saw, though. You saw the mother say, we used to like Americans, and we understand that people make a mistake. But when it becomes mistake after mistake after mistake, they become our enemies. You heard the young man say that he would fight to protect himself against Americans and multiply what happened here by 1 million people. I will give Mike a full chance to respond to this very moving video, and you, right after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Hey, mister, studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with her $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. You've just seen a very powerful video produced by Iraqis talking about the death of one man, this boy's uncle, and how it affected a family. There are studies that show that virtually everyone agrees that hundreds of thousands of civilians have been killed, and some studies now suggest as many as 1 million Iraqis dead in this conflict. Mike, how do you respond to the video you just saw?
Well, as we've discussed, Mark, first of all, it's a homemade, home-produced video, or at least it looks like a home-produced video, with no citation as to the source, how it was done, where it was done, who these people are, et cetera,
well,
et cetera.
Well,
et cetera.
Just to be fair, there is a citation. So, it goes to hometownbaghdad.com.
Well, we know the website it's on, but we don't know who these people are.
Well, they tell you who they are. It's the looked it up. It's the Shira Foundation, and apparently
the creator of the video.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about the people who funded it. Yeah, we don't know who the people in the video are. It could be a total fabrication. It might be real. It might be an exaggeration of something that happened. We don't know that. So I don't think you can just accept these things on face value because there is a high level of propaganda that the enemy has become very good at getting out there.
Let's talk about what we know. You don't deny that the Humvee photo was realistic, was accurate, the video.
I don't have any particular problem with the Humvee
page. All right. So we have Humvees driving on the wrong side of the street.
Right.
There can be no doubt, I don't think, in your mind, that there are people in Iraq that are mistaken for terrorists and shot and killed every day in Iraq.
Accidents and mistakes happen in war
every day. That's right.
Every day.
And you don't doubt that hundreds of thousands, at least, Iraqi civilians are dead.
You know, I haven't seen anybody hang their hat on an absolute number that
everybody agrees
on.
It's hard to get an absolute number. Right.
But let's say on a bad day, on a day when the bombs really, really are going off and taking out a lot of Iraqis, they might lose 200 people in two or three bombings or something
right.
like that.
That's right.
Well, you multiply 200 a day, which is not what's happening, but if you multiply that times 365 days a year, you just don't come up with 1 million people. It's just not, you know, there's not enough, you know, happening there. And we know it's not 200 a day. 200 is a bad day. Sometimes, you know, there are no bombs
well,
that go off.
Well, 200 is a bad day per bomb, Mike. I think you're not looking at per day.
No,
one bomb taking out 200 is a particularly bad bomb.
One bomb, but typically a bad day is two or three bombs that take out a total of 200.
My point is this. However many are being killed, we do know, you may not trust this video,
No, I say we don't have any reason to believe or not to believe.
Okay, but here's the point. We know that we have Humvees driving on the other side of the road. We know that we have people who are accidentally being killed. We know what happens every day. I've had John Bruins on this show talk about they would go in to Iraqi homes looking for guns and you know, throw people up against the wall and it totally humiliate the family.
Well, that's the way it's done.
Well, here you have people who, at least ostensibly, used to like America, but now don't like America anymore. And what do they want to do? They want to leave Iraq. They try. They go all the way to Jordan, and they're turned away, and they're going back.
What made them think they were just going to drive over into Jordan, I don't know.
The point is this. A recent CBS poll shows that 3 out of 4 Americans believe that we are creating more terrorists than we are stopping by continuing the occupation in Iraq. We're taking ordinary people and creating terrorists in greater numbers. We're killing some, but we're creating more than we're killing.
Let's say, for the sake of argument, that this tape has truth to it. Let's say it's an accurate tape, just for the sake of argument, which I'm not willing to give up immediately because we can't confirm it. Let's say it's accurate. Mistakes do happen. I hate to say it, but in war, you're going to have innocent people that die, and it happens all the time. It happens every day in war because there are mistaken identities, there are mistaken situations. Even you know, domestically, you have situations where police think they see a suspect pull a weapon out, and it turned out maybe, maybe not. It happens in war all the time, and these guys are not going to wait to see what the guy was pulling out of his pocket. If he's pulling something out of his pocket, he's going to get a fuselage of fire cutting them down. That's just the way it is in a war zone.
Two things. One, if it happens in a domestic situation, if the police kill a civilian, and we've had cases where a woman had a wrench or something and was shot, there are investigations. There are people look into it. Sometimes the police officers are punished. Sometimes they're ruled to have justification. But I think it's pretty fair to say that no one's going to investigate this. This happens all the time in Iraq.
I would not necessarily say that was not investigated. It may very well have been investigated. We don't know.
I don't think these things are all...
Anytime...
Even Abu Ghraib wasn't investigated until someone illegally slipped a tape of the torture to the American press.
Anytime there's a combat incident over there, a report is filed and it's reviewed. Now, it's reviewed. If it looks okay, then it goes no further. But if it doesn't look okay, it's investigated. You can't say that it's not, you know...
How about this, Mike?
Of course they do look at it.
How about... Wouldn't it be good that if you think this is so rare that this happens, that we accidentally...
No, I don't think it's all that rare. I think it happens probably...
Every day.
Frequently.
Probably happens every day.
I wouldn't
have. Would you say we owe it to this family to give an explanation, to give a report, to do what we would do if an American were killed in a similar circumstance?
It depends on the circumstances. I can't say blanketly because I don't know the circumstances involved here. But I can tell you what, Mark. If I'm in a war zone, if my country's being occupied and I'm in a war zone, and I come face to face with a Humvee that's driving on my side of the road and, you know, from around roadblocks, and I got no option to do anything, the first thing I do is I stop the car and I put my hands up. I don't put my hands any place other than up where they can see them.
Well, according to the neighbor, that's what happened. But
we don't know that.
The point is this. You're taking a people that were, you know, not particularly happy under Saddam Hussein, and you've made them miserable. You have ruined an entire country, whether economically, whether it's 100,000 deaths or 1 million deaths. We know that there's 1 million exiles. People want to leave. You take people who really had no feelings about America or maybe a small dislike for America and creating hatred where hatred didn't exist. You are creating more terrorists than you're killing.
In the situation of a family which maybe tragically and innocently loses a family member, I can see where they'd lose faith. I can see where they
where they
start to question why this happened and would it have happened if the whole war had not happened, etc. That's a very normal reaction, I think, and justifiable reaction for a family who has lost someone under the circumstances that they don't think are just. Let's say the guy was dirty as hell. Let's say that he was a terrorist and he was pulling something out of his pocket and he was going to be a bad guy. They might not have known that, or they might not accept it. Their reaction on this tape is certainly a very understandable, legitimate reaction. However, you have to understand, in war zones, this is going to happen. The soldiers...
But all of Iraq is now a war zone? The guy's going to get bread, and it's a war zone? This isn't a battlefield. It isn't like he wandered out in the middle of the battlefield between troops shooting at each other. The guy is buying some bread at the grocery store.
We know, unfortunately, the car bombs and the explosive devices and things like that go over most times in places where it's least expected. I don't know this for a fact, but I would certainly look into the fact that when the Humvee is driving on the wrong side of the road or tapping cars, that's a tactic. they are told, do not get caught in traffic. If you're caught in traffic in a Humvee,
you're
a sitting duck. And so they're told, do whatever you do, because it looked to me like the Iraqis were used to this. You get tapped, it's the Humvee saying, I ain't going to get caught in traffic.
I saw some people look very surprised. Well, but the heart of it is
they're not going to sit there and be sitting ducks.
The heart of it is this. The question is that at the end of the day, if this goes on and on and on, are we creating more terrorists than we're killing? Let me go to the phones. We've got George from Fairfax. George, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, thank you. I did call last week, actually. And
we're glad to have you back.
Welcome back, George. I remember you.
Well, that's nice of you to say so. I have a little observation here, and it's actually a follow-up a little bit on what we discussed last week. The Italian reporter and her cameraman were investigating that memo in Rome. She was in Iraq, and they shot at her when she was getting out of one of the areas, and it was pretty clear that there was no hostile intent from those people. It killed the cameraman. I think they were trying to get both of them because she had information on the burglary and stuff that they did not want to get out. But moving on beyond this...
I did read that report as well, George.
Yeah. What's interesting is you've got the Iraqis trying to get out of Iraq to go to Jordan, but it's the same in this country. You've got Americans leaving and going to Canada. I mean, it's just as bad here, it seems like. People are afraid of this administration as well. So it seems to me...
I got to tell you, George, I'll just agree with you on that because I think most Americans aren't feeling the pain. In fact, one of the reasons why our war czar, General Lute, is talking about instituting a draft in America, seriously saying that it's not off the table, he said this week, is I think because most Americans don't feel the pain. The policymakers in Washington certainly don't. Virtually none of them have children serving in the military. There are a few Democrats that were just elected, virtually no Republicans, very few Democrats. And they're on vacation in August and letting our troops and their families suffer the pain. And now we have General Petraeus. Let me just show one more video here. We have General Petraeus. See if we can get that here. This is a very short one. Let's play that right now.
I don't know whether this will be decades, but the average counterinsurgency is somewhere around a 9 or a 10 year endeavor.
That's all. The average insurgency is around a 9 or a 10 year endeavor. This might be decades. And I don't see that we're achieving. And this is Petraeus. This is the Republican hero. This is all your eggs in Petraeus' basket.
Mark, I have been consistent from the beginning in voicing my opinion that we're going to be there well past 10 years. Now, hopefully
well
not,
past 10 years.
Well past 10 years. There's no reason to think that we're going to abandon that area in anything less than 10 years. And it's in my opinion, it's going to be closer to 20 or 30 or permanent basing.
How many people will die in the course of our occupation of Iraq over several decades? Tens of thousands of Americans, hundreds of thousands, millions of Iraqis.
I doubt hundreds of thousands of Americans.
Tens of thousands.
I would not be surprised to see that we get upward towards the 10,000 by the time this whole thing is over.
View, we are killing more terrorists than we're creating. I mean, that's the heart of the question. Because if we're creating more than we're killing, then the whole thing is counterproductive.
No, are we pacifying the country and giving the people a chance to establish their own government and do something? The whole reason for the surge now, and really for the occupation, is to create a safety and security in Baghdad so that the Iraqi people can form and organize their own government. So far, they have not really shown us they're up to the task.
No, they're not.
But hope springs eternal here.
I'll tell you.
I think there's a possibility.
We have to take a break. George, I'll give you a chance to respond again in a second when we come back. If you want to join in the conversation, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
My name is David Bell. I am a resident of Virginia's 11th Congressional District, and I ask Representative Tom Davis to initiate or support investigations into violations of the law by President Bush and his administration.
Tom Davis. My name is Jean Reynolds, and I'm one of your constituents. I want you to join immediately with other members of Congress to begin an investigation of the criminal acts that George Bush has committed.
I'm Nick Spengler of Ashland, Virginia, and I would like our troops to come home and Bush to get out of office.
My name is Nancy Maynard. I live in the 11th Congressional District, and this message is for Tom Davis. I'm asking you to please investigate for impeachment.
My name is Bruce Smith. I live in the 11th Congressional District in Woodbridge, Virginia. I want Congressman Davis to support the investigation of President Bush and Vice President Cheney and those that foisted this war on us.
Hello, Congressman Davis. I'm Carrie Plonson from the 11th Congressional District, and I'd like you to take immediate action to investigate George Bush and his offenses in leading this country into a war that's unwarranted and there is no solution for.
We have to impeach. I am just appalled that we would not, quote, waste our time with impeachment. The message to the world has to be that Bush and Cheney are guilty of international war crimes about which we can't do anything. We can do a lot about the crimes committed within the U.S. Constitution.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. General Petraeus, the great hero of this administration, the one that's going to come back in September and supposedly tell us how well everything is, even though apparently the White House is going to write what he's going to say. They're not going to actually give him free rein to say what he wants to say. Do you have a problem with that, first of all? I mean, should Petraeus be allowed to speak his mind, or is it okay for the White House to write what he has to say?
I think no matter what the promises were earlier, the expectations now is that the Congress is going to hear from the commander, and I think that it would be smart politics for the White House to let the commander deliver his report.
I think so, too. I don't think they'll let him write it, but we will see. We will see. In any case, he's going to come back with his report. He has said, as you heard him say, it will take decades. You heard Mike here say that it may take decades. It may be more than 10,000 American deaths. We have the war czar, General Lute, saying that a draft is on the table. And yet, at the end of the day, if we are creating more terrorists than we're killing, then all of these American lives, all of these American wounded, all of these hundreds of billions of dollars is for naught. And a recent CBS poll shows that Americans think we are 3-1 creating more terrorists than we're killing. And frankly, after seeing videos like the one I saw, I have to say, I think we are too.
Well, Mark, of course, the American people are perfectly willing and should express their points of view in the next general election that comes up, which will be November of 08. And they'll have the opportunity to evaluate the candidates and what they stand for and make their decisions. And maybe we'll have a Congress that looks much different from the one that we have now, or maybe we'll have a Congress that looks very much similar to one we have now. Maybe we'll have a Republican retakeover of Congress. In the White House, of course, we'll have a choice between the two parties and a plethora of third-party candidates, and the American people will make their choice there. But as long as we have the current Congress and the current president, we're going to continue to prosecute the war. We're going to try and create a widespread blanket of security and stability for the American people. We're going for the Iraqi people, and we're going to continue to try and arm twist, cajole, persuade, whatever it is that we're doing to the Iraqi government, get them to somehow get to the political reconciliation that they need to get to. That has been the single largest disappointment.
It has been.
It doesn't mean that we're not going to continue to give them that blanket of security and safety that we're trying to give them, to give them the maneuvering room to get to that political reconciliation, but ultimately they have to step up to the plate and do it.
I agree. There's so many things in what you just said. I want to unpack them one by one. First of all, do you think election 2008, the Iraq war, will be the primary issue in that election, November 2008?
It's too early to tell.
But if conditions hold a year from now as they hold today,
if conditions stay static, yes, it'll be that and immigration.
Will the Republican people virtually all of them support Bush's policy in Iraq? I'm other than Ron Paul and a few of the, but in terms of the primary candidates, is there a single one that's taken a strong position opposed to where Bush is?
If there is not measurable progress on the ground in Baghdad, and I'm talking not only the surge, which appears to be working militarily very well, But if there is not measurable progress in terms of the Iraqi government and the political reconciliation that takes place, I think you'll see some varying ideas coming from the Republican Party that don't...
Including the candidates running for president, you think?
I think, yeah, probably.
Who will be first to break?
Oh, you've already mentioned Ron Paul, although he's not a particularly serious player.
I mean, Romney, Giuliani, certainly McCain won't be.
No, McCain, McCain
Thompson, maybe?
Very much believes what's going on.
Yes, he does.
You know, I'm not sure which one will be. And when you describe it as a break, it's not necessarily a break as much
a
as
difference.
It is perhaps a veer or something.
Let me raise some other questions. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I mean, they're going to be looking for ways to make it work and to provide some semblance of justification in terms of the results in Iraq. And I don't think the Democrats' idea of just, okay, let's pull out, does that.
Well, that's, of course, not the Democrats' idea. As
well,
you know, there's
Democrats
all kinds
idea.
Of different ideas.
Oh.
Harry Reid and Pelosi have not suggested that. They have.
Harry Reid has. I mean, he just says, let's redeploy.
Well,
I mean,
redeploy.
You know,
that's
well,
right.
What's that other than pull out? I mean, you
it
know.
Means you're not driving Humvees to the streets of Baghdad. It means you're not, you know, going through where people are trying to buy bread and shooting at people. It means redeploying to borders, going into perhaps terrorist cells, but not having massive force. You know, Mike, you had a very interesting Freudian slip, I think, when you said at one point, you know, we have to provide for the security of the American people. I mean, the Iraqi people.
Right.
It was a Freudian slip because if this is about the Iraqi people, the Iraqi people don't want us there. And this is about the American people. Heck, we should have security for the American people by going into Pakistan, as Barack Obama suggested, or some way going after Osama bin Laden. I mean, this isn't about security of the American people or the Iraqi people anymore, is it? It's about security of oil companies.
If and when we have actionable intelligence that tells us where we can get Osama, rest assured that the president will order the attack that will get it done.
My point is the Iraqi people don't want us there.
What we don't do is we don't broadcast to the world that we're going to invade Pakistan looking for him.
My point is about the Iraqi people.
I mean, Obama's campaign, the wheels came off last week when he did that.
I disagree. But my point is about the Iraqi people. They don't want us there. And how are we... You admitted yourself that politics is the hardest thing. Our defense secretary, Robert Gates, in fact, said himself, there's no military solution here. There is only a political solution. So what are we doing? We're playing whack-a-mole. We're going to the carnival, and we whack them in Anbar, and they stay quiet there, and they pop up in Baghdad. And we whack them in Baghdad, and they pop up somewhere else. And we're never going to pacify the entire country unless perhaps we have a draft and send a couple million Americans over there to die in greater numbers. Or we simply recognize that the politics are too severe. There's a wonderful article, which I sent you, by Tom Friedman, who is someone who I think is very much a realist in the Middle East. I don't think you can accuse him of being... he supported the Iraq War, I think, at the beginning. He's backed down on it. He's not exactly far left. He's just generally known to be right. And he talks about the fact that it doesn't matter how successful we are militarily, because we're just whacking that mole. If the Iraqi government, which while our troops were out there fighting and dying and accidentally killing civilians too, in the heat of August, the Iraqi parliament is out taking a two-month vacation, twice as long as our Congress. What are we fighting for if they can't solve it themselves? This is what Tom Friedman says. If the Shia and the Sunni can't get their act together and come to a nation, what the heck are we doing there trying to bind this country together?
We are giving them the opportunity to come together. Now, it may be that they never do that. And that will be disappointing for...
When will we know? Because so far, they're not succeeding and they're nowhere close.
So far, their progress has been disappointing, without a doubt.
So a year from now, if their progress is disappointing, can we leave Iraq?
It depends on how disappointing it is on a relative scale. I would think that if we make absolutely no progress in the next 12 months...
There's no progress on the oil law. There's no progress on sharing power. As I said, the Iraqi government is on vacation.
We have all kinds of problems in the United States, and our Congress is on vacation. So
that's true,
think
but
that's
we're not we're not fighting for the throes of our existence.
Look,
you know, George Washington, you know, kept up the battle even in the middle of Christmas. He did an attack because it was the founding nature of our country.
What we need is action, not wheel spinning. It does no good to tell the Iraqi Congress or Parliament or whatever the hell they have over there. It does no good to tell them you've got to sit there and get frustrated and mad at each other, et cetera, until you come up with it. What we need is a solution. We need leadership, and it may be that Al-Maliki is not the guy.
It may
Why
be that we
should
need
we be
guy.
Choosing their guy?
Well, I didn't say we weren't choosing him. I said it may be that he's not the guy. What we need is the Iraqis.
Maybe we're not
up,
the force.
To come up with a leader who can bring the forces together and convince them it's in their best interest not to degenerate into a civil war and not to disintegrate into a bloodbath and genocide and then go ahead and lose the million Iraqis in a genocidal bloodbath that you were talking about at the beginning of the show.
So
That's what we don't want to see happen.
I have a modest proposal that you may consider radical. Tell the Iraqi government, if you don't get your act together in 6 months, we're out of here. We're wiping our hands of you. You're on your own. Good luck. We wish you well. We hope we'll give you enough security. We'll give you 6 months to work it all out. If you don't work it all out in 6 months, goodbye. We had enough American blood. We have enough Iraqi blood spilled. We're not solving anything. We're creating more terrorists. Give people a deadline, and sometimes they act.
The last thing you do in a war is give a deadline and announce your plans like that. It gives your enemies, the people who are trying to destroy you, nerve. It gives them intelligence. It gives them the incentive to make things even worse. You want to let them think you're there for the duration, and then when they know that they can't beat you militarily, that's when they start looking at what's the political solution to this whole thing, because we know we can't win a battlefield victory. Your scenario is a battlefield victory for the enemy. I don't want to give them that.
Except this isn't a fight against a specific enemy. When we come back, I want to talk about how we're actually arming our enemies, and that's part of what I'm using John Bruins for. But before we do, I know George from Fairfax has another question. He's been very patient. George, take it away.
I just want to reflect back on what you said earlier about most Americans not knowing they got their head in the sand. And I think that is an indictment on the American media. What is also an indictment on the American media was the Miramal Khanzi business at the CIA on 123 in McLean. Miramal Khanzi was exacting revenge when a CIA officer authorized the execution of his father, who had been helping the Americans rearm the Taliban to protect Afghanistan. He just got in the way, and they ordered an execution. The media omitted that completely, that part. What they did reflect on was the fact that he shot up people. The first person to die in that lineup was the person who authorized the execution of his father. And this is the revenge. These people don't think in the same way. They don't bring legal actions. They don't file a case in general district court. They bring an AK-47. They bring suicide bombers. It's only a matter of time before they start coming to this country and doing that some more.
George, I want to thank you for your call. I think the administration has put everyone in a catch-22, where they want to say, we declare victory no matter what. We had many years under Bill Clinton where there were no terrorist attacks on American soil. They never mentioned those, but what they do is they say, there are no attacks on American soil since the anthrax attack 4 years ago, and therefore we're doing a good job in the war on terror. But I guarantee you, if there is an attack, they'll say, we need to strengthen the military, we need to fight harder, we need to take away more American civil liberties. This administration is ready to declare victory no matter what happens. If there's an attack, they'll say, aha, victory, Americans, come join us, take away your civil liberties, throw away your constitution, we have to fight the terror. And if there's no attack, they say, look at what a good job we're doing. And in the meanwhile, 4,000 Americans and coalition forces are dead in Iraq.
Mark, how much leeway do you want to give the terrorists, the bad guys, who are probably here now?
Terrorists? Which terrorists?
The ones who are here in the United
States. In the United States.
Ready to spring something on us,
well,
and we don't know what it is. How much leeway do you want to give them? Now, there's no doubt in my mind that we could listen to everybody's conversations, intercept everybody's mail, everybody's email,
I guarantee you we're doing it right now.
And we could find those people. Now, we don't want to do that.
We could find these people.
We don't want to do that. But we do want to target the people that we're looking for and read their mail and listen to their phone conversations, et cetera. So when we have a reason to do this, including the computers that will intercept the phone conversations and listen for keywords and then record the ones that are coming in the way they need to be listened to, when we do that and we can get enough intelligence to stop domestic terrorist attacks, I don't understand why the leaders of Congress and the Democratic Party want to stop that. It just doesn't make any sense.
First of all, if you're actually targeting someone, if you actually know who you're targeting, we have something called the Fourth Amendment in the United States Constitution. You go to a court, you go get a warrant, you can even get a warrant from a secret court, the FISA court. We can go after a specific person. The problem with these massive database things is, I don't want to write an email to someone and say about, a woman, she's the bomb, because I used the word bomb, and suddenly I'm going to be targeted. I'm going to be spied on. You support a bill with zero protections for American civil liberties.
No, that's
you
not
support
true.
A bill that says Attorney General Gonzalez decides if you're guilty and then holds you in jail forever without an attorney. What is wrong with courts? What is wrong with congressional oversight? Why do you hate the founders of the Constitution?
There is no opportunity to go to the courts and get these things done on a timely basis. You know, there was there was an example I used.
We have to go to a break.
All right, I'll
we have to go to a break.
Back,
but I'll tell you,
this is a good one.
It is a good one. I'll tell you this. One of the things the Democrats said is give 30 days to go to the court. What Gonzalez insisted was no court oversight whatsoever. And I have to ask, what is he trying to hide? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back.
Some people in Fairfax County don't know what public access means.
Some think it's just another channel on the dial.
But it's much more than that.
It's the voice of the people.
People like you.
Your neighbors, your friends.
Or your family.
People who want to share ideas.
Opinions.
Cultures.
Lifestyles.
Art.
Sports.
Music. Events. Entertainment.
History.
Science.
Beliefs.
People who want to learn about television.
Producing.
Directing.
Cameras.
Audio.
Lighting.
Editing. Or radio. Talk. Music.
Whatever you think people should hear.
Public access is the place where everyone has a voice.
And it's the place where that voice gets heard.
A place where you can create your own form of personal expression.
So what do you want to say?
Whatever it is.
You can say it here.
Because we're public access.
For the people.
By the people.
It is about balancing our choices between the gray of the concrete jungle and the stunning beauty of the real one. Between a stoic facade of granite and the fury of the canyon. It's why there's EarthShare, the simple way to find balance. EarthShare is the workplace giving program bringing the leading environmental groups under one umbrella. Support EarthShare, support them all. EarthShare. Please ask your employer about workplace giving. To learn more, visit our website. Thousands of kids in this country have everything it takes to go to college. Except the money. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the Iraq War from an Iraqi point of view, and we're also talking about surveillance of Americans. My guest is Mike Lane, Republican strategist. Mike, I do want to get to the surveillance issues that you raise, and I promise I will do that before you end the show. But let's just finish talking briefly about Iraq, because I have right here a clip from John Bruins, who's been on this show before. And he's actually talking to the BBC reporter.
Right.
And he's talking about how not only are we creating terrorists the way that the video I showed, that creating enemies of America, we're literally arming them. Let me play just 2 minutes of that.
The Hardcastle, thank you. The revelation that the Pentagon no longer knows the whereabouts of 190,000 AK-47 assault rifles and pistols distributed to the Iraqi security forces in 2004 and 2005 is extraordinary. There are fears that some of the weapons have fallen into the hands of the insurgents, the very people attacking the US military. John Bruins served in Iraq during this period. He's now left the US Army and is a critic of the war. He gave me his reaction to the news.
I'm just incensed, but I'm not surprised. When I was there training the Iraqis myself personally in January of 2004, we were handing them AK-47 assault rifles, and we didn't have a logbook. We didn't have a database that tracked these weapons and which Iraqi soldiers that we had given them to. Basically, the training cycle was about a week long when I was there, and I would call cadence in English, and they speak Arabic. They could barely understand what I was saying. And then when we would have a weapons qualification, and we would hand them an AK-47, and all they had to do was pull the trigger. They didn't even have to qualify by hitting a target. And our commanders instructed us to stand directly in back of the Iraqis who were shooting, because we were afraid that they might turn the weapons on us. So we were instructed to jump them and kill them if they were to turn the weapons on us. And we were positive that the insurgency had infiltrated the Iraqi army. And when we were done training them, we had incorporated them into our units to accompany us on missions. But prior to the missions, we never told the Iraqi troops where we were going, because we were afraid that they would tell the insurgency ahead of time, and when we went to carry out our mission, we would walk directly into an ambush. So they would get in formation, and we would tell them where we were going, and when we did, they would cover their faces with hoods and masks out of fear or shame of being seen with Americans in their communities.
So it's pretty powerful stuff here. We handed out AK-47s without a logbook. They actually made sure they were in front, which is smart, because they weren't sure if these people would like turn around and shoot them. But in any case, we knew that they had infiltrated the Iraqi army, and we didn't even tell them where we're going because we're afraid of an ambush. Here it is, we are arming the very people that are killing us. First we create the hatred, and then we arm the insurgents. Let me suggest to you, Mike Lane, that setting a deadline to withdraw U.S. troops is far less dangerous to American troops than literally arming the enemy.
All right. Let's go through this. I mean, you bring up a lot of points here, or
John Bruins.
John Bruins.
He's been on this show, by the way.
And apparently a very good guest, too.
He was.
First of all, he's talking about more than a year ago in Iraq that this was going on. It's not the current regime. It's not what's going on today.
We're not training the Iraqi military today and giving them guns?
No, he's talking about the dispensing of weapons without keeping a log as to who was issued which weapons.
So now we're keeping a log. 190,000 guns later, we just started keeping a log because it came out in the press.
I don't know when we started, but I do know we are keeping it now.
I'm glad to hear that. It's a little late, but I'm glad to hear
there, it. You know, to expect the Iraqi army to be as good as the American army is to have unrealistic expectations.
It's good as.
No,
we're arming the enemy.
It is.
In fact, even, I think it was Maliki, it may have been one of our generals, I think it was one of our generals who said that we have to give amnesty to troops, Iraqi people who have killed Americans, murdered American troops. We have to give them amnesty because now they're on our side.
Well,
we're giving them amnesty, we're giving them weapons, we're teaching them to hate us, and then we're wondering why all our money is going to counterproductive uses.
You're confusing yourself, Mark. Let's get back to what Bruner said, or
Bruns.
Yes, the training for the Iraqis was a week long. You know how long our people go through training? They go through 13 weeks of training. In the Iraqis, the objective was to get the battalions built, get them up and operating, and get them ready for combat. And, you know, we weren't giving them necessarily all the defensive training that our troops go through. They certainly weren't getting all the physical training. We were trying to get them up and operating. The second thing is issuing them weapons. You know, it matters not really whether or not we kept the log as to who had what. The only reason the United States Army we do that, Marine Corps, is so that when your time is up and you check out, they can make sure you're giving your weapon back to them so you don't take it with you. You know what? They don't do that. In Iraqi, when they're infiltrators, they just desert and they take their weapon with them. And keeping a log or something like that wouldn't make any difference one way or the other. The third thing that I want to address is the idea of the infiltration. Of course they've infiltrated the Iraqi army. How do we know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are? The answer is we don't. In fact, the American army was infiltrated. You'll remember in the first month of the war, one of our guys, who happened to be a Muslim soldier, decided he was going to be a sympathizer with the Iraqi people, and he rolled a grenade into the command tent right there as we were prosecuting in the very beginning, before things even turned questionable.
This is not one crazy man.
So we were infiltrated. Now
this is 190,000 missing guns, 320 tons of missing explosives. We're training the very people. We're even giving amnesty. Our ambassador to Iraq is the one who said that we were open to granting amnesty to former Al-Qaeda insurgents
I mean, are we mad?
Well, first of all, the ambassador can say anything he wants. Sometimes they speak in turn, sometimes they speak out of turn, sometimes they speak off the cuff. Until the president says something, I don't think you can take it at face value.
He's still our ambassador.
The ambassador, too.
He hasn't been reprimanded, to my knowledge.
Well, they usually don't tell you when they do that, Mark. You know,
I would think they would if he doesn't want. If this is something that's so against American policy.
And it may turn out that ultimately, to achieve political reconciliation, there are a few people who have been even leaders of the insurgent on the other side that we accept into the reconciliation coalition to make the whole thing work.
I think I'm living in Lewis Carroll world.
If that happens, you know, if that is the key that makes it work, it may be something that we consider. Let's arm the people
that kill American soldiers.
If they're on our side.
I'm sure at the time they take the AK-47,
I don't think they turn around
and shoot our troops, as John Bruins feared they might. They take it, then they give it to the Al-Qaeda operative, and then they shoot our troops.
I don't think any of our generals over there are saying that we're going to just take you on our side without checking them out pretty close first. You know, I mean,
I'm sure they shake their hands and look them in the eye.
No, they've got to prove themselves first. You start off with a small thing, and you work your way up to a position.
They're wearing hoods.
You've got to prove it.
They're wearing hoods.
Not the ones that we're bringing onto our side are not wearing hoods. They're proud to be collaborating with the Americans. It's the reason places like Anbar province
guns.
Have switched around.
It gives them guns.
And now they're cooperating with us, and they're clearing Al-Qaeda out of the place. Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
More and more people are dying every year.
Every month
in Iraq, more Iraqis are dying, more Americans are dying.
Right.
It's costing hundreds of billions of dollars. You yourself said it could take decades. General Petraeus said it could take decades.
I think it will.
And at the end of the day, I want to go back to the very question I opened this broadcast with. Are we creating more enemies than we're killing? You think at the end of the day, I want you to say this on the record if you believe it's true, we are decreasing the number of America's enemies.
At the end of the day, what we're going to hopefully have is a stable, safe, and secure Iraq that is governed by the Iraqi people in a democratic form of government. That's the objective.
Other than your say-so and George Bush...
This is the Quality News Network. Mexico is bracing for torrential rain and wind as Hurricane Dean picks up power, swirling westward through the Gulf of Mexico toward the Yucatan Peninsula. Currently at Category 4, Dean is expected to gain in strength over the next few hours to 155 miles per hour, which will place it at Category 5. Due to slam into central Mexico later today, the storm has killed at least 10 people as it's crossed Caribbean waters. In Japan, 165 passengers and crew safely evacuated a China Airlines jet just before it burst into flames on the airport tarmac. Authorities say a fuel leak may be to blame for the explosion of the jet's left engine just 1 minute after landing. Taiwan has now grounded its fleet of Boeing 737-800 jetliners until further notice. The head of the Senate Judiciary Committee says time's up for President Bush to produce evidence that his surveillance program is legal. Senator Patrick Leahy says the Bush administration is currently in contempt of Congress. A roadside bomb killed the governor of the Shiite Muthanna province in Iraq today. It is the second assassination of a top provincial official within 1 week. Two car bombs also struck Sadr City and a busy market in Baghdad. 6 people were killed. At least 20 were wounded. A mortar strike hit eastern Baghdad's Amman district at midday. At least one person killed there. 3 others were wounded. That's according to an Iraqi interior minister. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki arrived in Syria for his first visit there since taking office last year. U.S. officials say that Syria is allowing foreign fighters to cross its borders as its capital city struggles with a growing number of desperate Iraqi refugees. An Israeli airstrike today killed 6 members of Hamas executive force. They were riding in a car thought to be carrying suspected Palestinian militants. NFL star quarterback Michael Vick has accepted a plea deal for his alleged role in a dogfighting operation. Vick will